last human soldiers straggled, gasping, through the Dravalu Pass and collapsed on the greensward under the singing yew, which was old even then. They sat up quickly when 7 Pegasi circled the meadow above the pass and flew down to investigate. The journal of that company's second commander still exists in the palace library, a small, worn, round-cornered, hand-bound book, slightly bowed to the shape of the pocket it was carried in. He reported the historic meeting.
"We had but just come through the final rocky gate and had set ourselves down in the shade of a strange great tree, which had short, soft spikes or needles all along its branches, and no leaves, when swift-moving shadows fled briefly between us and the sun, but against the wind. We looked up in haste, for rocks are not unheard of, and I had raised my hand to give the signal for the archers to string their bows. We saw at once that these were no rocks, but still I held up my hand, for there were nothing else we knew either. And they clearly had seen us, and did approach. But these creatures are nothing like rocks, except they do also possess wings. They are like nothing I have ever seen, except perhaps by some great artist's creative power. They are a little like horses, but yet far more fine than any horse, even a queen's palfrey. They are a little like deer, except that deer are rough and clumsy beside them, and their wings are huge, huger than eagles. And when the lowering sun struck through their primaries, for as they cantered toward us, they left their wings unfurled. The light was broken as if by prisms, and they were haloed in all the colours of the rainbow. Several of my folk came to their knees, as if we were in the presence of gods. And while I told them to stand and be steadfast, I did tell them gently, for I understood their awe. The Pegasi were happy to make a treaty with the humans, who were the first possibility of rescue the Pegasi had had. And the humans, dazzled by the Pegasi's beauty and serenity, were happy to make a treaty with them for the right to share their mountainous land. The wide plateaus, which ran like lakes around the mountaintop islands, were lush and fertile, and many of the island crests were full of gems and ores. The discussions as to the terms of the treaty had had to be held almost exclusively through the human magicians and the Pegasi shamans, however, who were the only ones able to learn enough of the other's language to understand and make themselves understood. And that was a check to enthusiasm on both sides.
"Is it not, then, a language as we understand language?" wrote the second commander, whose name was Victor. "Does it encompass some invisible touch unavailable to humans, as a meeting of our hands in greeting, or a kiss between dear friends? What can we not grasp of it, and why cannot our magicians explain this lack to us?"
Sylvie's tutor, Ahathin, had brought Sylvie to the library while they were studying this portion of the annals. Ordinary people needed a sheaf of special permissions to look at anything half so old, frail and precious as the second commander's journal. Ahathin, as the princess's tutor, had merely made the request, and when the two of them appeared at the library door, the head librarian himself bowed, saying,
"Princess, worthy magician,"
and led them to the table where the journal already lay waiting for them, with an honour guard of the Queen's own light-bearers standing on either side of the table. The Queen was the library's governor. Sylvie looked at them thoughtfully. They were wearing their swords, but they were also wearing chai, to indicate that they could not hear anything she and Ahathin said to each other. There were two kinds of chai, the ceremonial and the invested. The ceremonial ones just hung over your ears and looked silly. Invested chai had been dedicated by a magician and really stopped the wearer's hearing. You couldn't tell by looking at them which kind they were. Sylvie had often wondered how high-wearing guards were going to protect anything if they couldn't hear anyone coming. Was there a protocol for when an honour guard wearing ceremonial high could stop pretending they couldn't hear?